You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Daniel Scrivener.
You always have to look inside to really understand, because I think all design at the end of the day falls flat if it doesn't connect with customers and if it doesn't understand the market that you're in, and it doesn't understand the problem that your specific customers or prospective customers are trying to solve.
From college dropout to head of design at Square to CEO of Flow, a simple project management software used by teams like Apple, Shopify, TED, and Harvard to manage projects and tasks, collaborate, and stay productive, Daniel Scrivener's path to success has been anything but typical. Today, he's considered a leader in his field, with numerous design awards and accolades under his belt, and a client roster that includes household names like Nike and Disney. Daniel, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. I'm super excited to be here and talk.
So I have to know, just because it made the bio, when you talk about a path that's anything but typical, I have to know more, only because I'm a theater major who now works pretty exclusively in the world of business. So I somehow ended up here, always curious to hear how others have ended up where they are as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. I mean, you know, the couple of maybe the Cliff Notes version of that story is I feel super fortunate that I stumbled into design for all intents and purposes when super young, when I was in high school. And what's interesting to me now is, you know, so I've been doing this general line of work, and I'm sure we'll talk about how that's evolved over time. But in general, design has been a passion of mine. It's been a part of my work in small and big ways over the last 15 plus years. And I stumbled into it. And, you know, if you had talked to me when I was growing up, that would have never even made the list of things I was interested in doing. And I think for a lot of people who, when they hear the word design, I think they think more of art and, you know, needing to have some sort of a, just be good with styling. And so maybe you were good in art class growing up, or you had a lot of creative outlets. And what's interesting is I had none of that. Art was one of my least favorite classes in high school. And, you know, the quick story of how I stumbled into design is I took a course over one summer semester when I was in high school about building websites. And back then, all that you had to know to build a website was just HTML. There was no JavaScript, no CSS, none of the other technologies that we rely on today. And so I took that class and I got addicted that I could have this idea and I could build something and I could share it with people. But that immediately led me to a conundrum. And that conundrum was, I was not excited with what I could make. So I had an idea in my mind, but I couldn't figure out how to get it there. And that led me to design, which is really the way that I think about that is it's the fascinating intersection. You know, it's an area it feels like I could spend the rest of my life pursuing of how do you solve really difficult problems and ultimately do that in a way where the outcome is bigger and better than the sum of all the parts and has some sort of spark and magic to it.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating because I do think you mentioned earlier in there that a lot of people have that kind of art class hang up with the word design, or that's kind of where many people's mind stops. And it's so much more of that. It's that approach. I am someone that values design and embraces it. Often, and yet I am not someone that thinks of myself as a designer per se, but I think it's interesting because my side of the house would technically be words, And the word design is kind of a roadblock for some, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's a word that I think it's lost a lot of value because I think it's been so overused that I'm not sure we have a shared definition of it anymore. But it's also a word that I think everybody can have their own take in a lot of ways on what it means or what it means to you. And, you know, for myself, the way that I think about it is really it's an approach to problem solving that combines qualitative and quantitative. And what you're really trying to do through the course of your design work is, you know, if you're doing it in the right way, you're inherently solving a really difficult problem, you know, and a lot of that can show up in a lot of ways. In my career, that's been everything from, you know, when I was at Apple, how do we design a better experience for people to build a Mac, which is super complicated and it's a super big, interesting problem. And that can be as simple as, you know, what's the next evolution of this logo or this word mark or this identity for a company. And so, you know, those problems can be very different, but ultimately what you're trying to do is solve that combining, you know, all the rational, logical sides of our brains and marrying that with this desire as well to create something that's iconic, to create something that's singular, to create something that connects with that audience and that stands out in, you know, a super crowded world that we all live in today.
So if it is, like you said, I love I love your definition. I agree that we lack sometimes a shared definition, but the approach to problem solving that involves the quantitative and qualitative. I think the other, once people get or have trouble getting past the label, if they're exposed to a great answer like you just gave, then the light bulb goes off, but then it's quickly replaced with, but wait, how do you do that? Where do you start? If it can be really in some ways anything, where do you start with finding that solution through design?
Yeah. And there's not a, you know, I wish there was a simple single sentence answer to that. And I think that's why in my mind, the key is, you know, it's not a silver bullet. It's not a formula that you can run things through and always get, you know, the exact result that you are hoping for. It really is at the end of the day, it's a process. And I think what's helpful about that is it's really clarifying because it means that, you know, while there isn't this repeatable magic formula that if you just follow these steps, you know, in order from 1 through 5, you're going to arrive at this result, but it's a process that you can break down. And I think, and you can think of it at the very least in broad brushstrokes, in terms of, you know, how you might break that into pieces. And the way that I traditionally think about it is the first piece is really just understanding or digging through all the data to try to find out the truth of what's there. And again, the reason that process is different is it's completely dependent on what you're working on at that moment in time. You know, that example I gave earlier of designing a better experience to build a Mac, that's a very different process than, you know, working on a rebranding because you're optimizing for very different things. You're dealing with very different mediums. You know, you have to think about the work differently, the scope differently, you know, and the product side of creating a better Build Your Mac experience. There's a lot of technology involved and there's a lot of nuance there. You know, and you're also solving business problems as well as UI problems. But regardless, I think the way that I would think about it is, you know, you always start with really trying to get a sense for the ground truth. And what I mean that is what's really going on here. So what are we hoping to achieve? Why are we embarking on this in the first place? Like what's the impetus? What's the reasons? Again, that could be qualitative or quantitative. And for most projects, it's both. And then really understanding, I think it's a lot of just starting internally. And I think that's been a big learning over time is you always have to look inside of the company that you're in, the project that you're working on, to really understand, because I think all design at the end of the day falls flat if it doesn't connect with customers and if it doesn't understand the market that you're in and it doesn't understand the problem that your specific customers or prospective customers are trying to solve. And so you always starts with really trying to get a sense for the ground truth. Then, you know, I think there's a, you know, a wide open middle section that I would just loosely call exploration. There's a lot of ways you can under-optimize for that, over-optimize for that. But I think that is, over the course of my career, I've begin. My thinking has flipped that the most valuable parts of this process are the first two parts of really understanding truth and spending a lot of time there and really digging really deep, and then optimizing for exploration, which the way that I think about that is it's just like an inverted funnel. You're trying to go out really wide with here's a bunch of different ways we could approach this problem, knowing that you've got a lot of blind spots, you've got a lot of biases, and you're trying to short circuit that or get over those by going really broad first. And then what you're going to try to do is pick the best ideas or the best components of all the different things you've explored, and then ultimately try to dial that in. And, you know, then ultimately you arrive at a conclusion. But I think it's those first two parts where things can really go off the rails. But also, if you can think about those in the right way, you can get to something magical over time.
So talking about thinking about those the right way, you mentioned a specific application to both brand experience and rebranding. So how does that design approach impact brand experience?
So that's something I've been spending a lot of time on over the last couple of years, you know, and there's one book that came out really recently by Emily Hayward called Obsessed. She's one of the co-founders, I believe, of Red Antler. And I think it's just a fantastic book. And I would encourage anyone that's, really curious about this question to go and pick that up and read it, because, and that's another thing that I've always found fascinating about design. And that's what's kept me so engaged for so long is there's while you can think of it as a process, there's a bunch of different, subcomponents of that. And there's a bunch of different ways to apply that. And each one has its own pitfalls, its own things that you need to keep in mind, peculiarities of how you need to approach it. And so, a lot of my experience historically has been on the marketing side. Marketing websites, how to kind of pitch a product, what a product page might look like on a website, as well as actual product design work. Those are both, even though for a lot of people, I think those can feel like there's a lot of overlap, those are very, very, very different things. There's a very different problems to tackle, and the process by which you get great results, I think, is different with those. With brand building, I would say it's even more far afield, because I think what I've been learning recently and what I've been really focusing on over the last 2 years is figuring this out at Flow. And what I would just say there really quickly is I think I've been learning that there's a lot more depth in terms of what you're really trying to achieve when you think about branding a company. And it's not so much on the design side. I think this is the other really complicated piece is, and it gives us something else to untangle is, so design, if you think about something like a rebranding, is certainly going to help with stuff like color palette. It's going to help with stuff like illustration style or photography style, typography. It's going to help with things like, what should our logo or mark be? Do we need an abbreviated mark that's a symbol? Do we need an app icon? Do we have a full logo? So it's basically, you can think about it, and the way that I've always referred to it is like you're building a toolbox for expression that you can then use and apply in a bunch of different places. So once you've built this toolbox, this brand toolbox, you can go and apply that to email marketing for emails you need to send customers. You can go and apply that to your website. You can apply that to your product. So there's that visual component. But what's fascinating to me is that really only gets you so far. And if your goal is to truly connect with customers emotionally and to build a true brand in the sense that it's not just a pretty logo, it's not just a nice kind of homepage, but it's something that people feel a real attraction to, it's very different, because then you have to go really deep on things like, well, what are our values? How can we express those and thread those through everything that we do and be really bold and innovative there? And how can we make sure that when we're communicating with customers in all the different ways that we need to, whether it's a tweet or an email or a marketing page or copy that's in product, how can we make sure that we're always threading those big ideas and those emotional connections through everything that we do? And I think when you think about it at that level, it's a very different exercise, and it requires, I think, one, your skill set. You need tremendous competency in copywriting, and you also need a tremendous competency, I would say, in storytelling. And so in brand building, I think it, in my mind, it's really this marriage of a deep understanding of the company or the person at play, building an aesthetic toolbox, as I described earlier, but almost much more importantly than that, really thinking about the values and the differentiation that you're focusing on, and then how you're going to bring that to life with words. And, you know, I think that's something I just want to underscore is I've been fortunate enough in my career to work with some of the best copywriters in the world at places like Apple. And when you have those experiences, you learn just how much of any great, you know, piece of marketing or piece of advertising is copy. And I would say it's like 80 to 90% idea and copy, and maybe less than 10% execution.
Hey, On Brand listeners, we talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show. So you mentioned your time at Square a bit, you mentioned your time at Flow a bit, and I know specifically over the past few months you've been working on rebranding, and that takes everything, that process that you just outlined of threading that meaning, those values throughout everything, and potentially disrupting that. So how have you approached that rebranding process?
Yeah, happy to talk about that. So to step back and maybe set a little bit of a broader context, and then we'll jump right in. Flow has been around for 10 years. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary this year. And it's had a lot of evolution over those 10 years. It started out as a really powerful tool for individuals to be able to manage their own tasks and share those with friends. And it's evolved over that 10-year period into much more of a productivity platform that we people can still use individually. We kind of think of that as a single player mode of the product. But what we spend most of our time on is the multiplayer mode of the product, which is basically a productivity platform that helps teams keep track of both the high level goals that they're working towards, the projects that they're focusing on to try to make progress towards those goals, the individual tasks that make up that project, and how all of that flows together at a super high level. So from timelines to things that are maybe potentially falling through the cracks. And then we have a bunch of other tools like, you know, files and notes and, you know, we have a messaging and chat products. So we have a bunch of other stuff that underpins that. But at the end of the day, it's basically a productivity platform that's built for both individuals and teams. And so I, you know, am lucky enough that I've gotten to step into the role of being CEO of the company for the last 18 months. And the reason I was really interested in the opportunity and just really fascinated by Flow is it's managed to survive and thrive in a hyper competitive industry. You know, we've been around for 10 years. We compete against niche players like Todoist and Basecamp. Some people might quibble with me on that definition, but I think for all intents and purposes, they're, you know, niche players. And then there's super well-funded players like Monday.com and Asana that have raised collectively hundreds of millions of dollars in venture capital. And so it's a really interesting market. Somehow, as a bootstrap team with very little outside capital. We've been able to survive and thrive there. And what we hear when we talk to our customers is that the reason they choose Flow, and what's fascinating about this space, is a lot of our customers have come to us after they've truly tried all of our competitors, which is a really something that doesn't exist in most other industries. But the reason people come to Flow is because what we try to achieve is this sweet spot of having powerful features so that you know, you can get a ton of value out of the product, but at the end of the day, executing those in the simplest, most focused, most refined ways. And the reason that's really important is we aspire to have a platform, we aspire to continue to refine this every single week at Flow, of something that's simple enough that anybody can pick it up in minutes, but it's powerful enough that you'll never outgrow it. And then on top of that, we try to have world-class execution so that it's also the best design tool in the space. And a lot of our customers refer to us as the Apple of the productivity space. And that's something we're really proud of. And that's something we try to you know, build on every single week. So for rebranding that, that's really been part of, over the last 18 months, what I have been tackling with the team is, where are we headed next? And what we're really, what we've really been trying to work on is, I think, taking a step back, thinking a lot about our own history, our own talents, what we can uniquely bring to the space, and what the kind of product we can deliver that nobody else can. We spent a lot of time thinking about that. We spent a lot of time thinking about the features and tools that we have in the app, and stripping those apart, stripping those down, and reassembling those into a brand new version of the app that we just are releasing to customers this week that we call FlowX, as a nod to our 10th anniversary. And then we've been thinking about a lot about differentiation. And just the metaphor or analogy that I use really often with the team, as well as when I talk to other people, is, you know, in the productivity space, there's no shortage of players. So in a lot of ways, I think it's very similar to, you know, you go to your local grocery store and you go to the ketchup aisle. Everybody, all of the brands that you're seeing there, they're literally selling something that there is almost no difference from product to product to product. But obviously, to stand out on that shelf and to get market share and to compete and win against other brands, you have to be super focused and dialed in on why somebody should buy your version of ketchup as opposed to somebody else's. And it's a kind of comical analogy, and that's by design. But I think it really does illuminate this idea that, you know, in a lot of spaces, there's very little real differentiation. You internally, you're always going to know with a really keen eye and a really keen sense what you do differently and why your version of this is special. But for customers that are a lot further away from the problem, everything kind of blends together. And I think that's why branding becomes even more important. And so, yeah, I'm happy to talk about that process, but it's been part of a bigger mission that we've been on over the last 18 months to reinvent Flow.
You know, I think that's fascinating. The other thing that you said in there, which is especially interesting with your background, but of being the Apple of the space, and that highlighted to me, beyond the obvious connection to your bio, is that that's such a useful bit of intel to know. Just a little analogy like that in hearing your company, your service, your product, your brand described that way. That is useful information that, as you're problem solving, you can look at what that is, because being the Apple of something carries with it a set of meanings that you can further extrapolate from, and not just be derivative of Apple, but can look at some of the reasoning, the emotional, the values behind that, and kind of scaffold out from there. But I'd love to know more about, yeah, the most recent rebrand, because I think that that's, we've talked about it a couple times over the past few months, but I think it's something that people jump into for various reasons and with varying degrees of success. But I think the biggest thing is it's never as easy as one might think.
No, it's incredibly difficult. And I've done it now multiple times. And I can, you know, tell you that it's remained, it feels every single time about the same level of difficulty, which is, you know, the way I typically describe that is you start off the project typically with a sense or an idea of where you want to head and of what where feels right. But what I found over time is what you really need to do when you're in that exploration phase is let go of that, almost take your hands off the steering wheel a little bit and just follow along with where the data and where your explorations and where your, you know, honestly, where your heart and gut is being drawn in that process. Because, you know, part of, and that's part of why I still find design so magical is there is this essence of the mystical, you know, for lack of a better word, that is somewhere there in the process. And so, yeah, the way it's worked for Flow, just to make that maybe a little bit more grounded and practical is, you know, so I came in and took over the role and knowing that the goal there was to try to figure out what this next chapter was for the company. And obviously, I needed to answer that question on a lot of different levels. At a high level, I needed to answer super basic things like, why do we exist? You know, why are we here in this space? What can we uniquely bring that no one else can? And I think a lot of brands don't ask this question with that level of intensity, but I find it incredibly useful. Just rather than focusing on mission statement, which I think so many times gets super muddied and ends up being this like gibberish soup that may make a lot of sense internally, but if you ever try to share that with anyone with less familiarity, there it's just clicks and whistles, and they're trying to understand what you're saying. And so I think it's much more helpful to frame it in terms of no, really, why do we exist? Why are we here? Why have we managed to succeed to date? What are the unique talents and skills and perspectives and ways of looking at the world that we bring to the table, and what can we create that nobody else can? And, you know, for us, that was probably the first 6 months of the last 18-month process on the rebranding side, was just getting a sense for that. And, you know, I shared that data point of what we hear often from customers when we pull them in net promoter scores, and that they compare us to Apple, and that a lot of people choose us because we're basically, it's like the three bears, you know, story where we're not too soft. We're not too firm. We're just right in the middle. And then on top of that, we can deliver an experience that's better than a lot of our competitors. And I think that's something that I really latched onto really quickly. And I wasn't sure where that would take us, but I knew it was a really important piece of data. And what I was hearing when I was reading between the lines, listening to customers is, that, just lay it out there, you know, a lot of our customers, I think, a lot of our competitors approach what they do with an immense focus on functionality. And so their products are immensely functional, but they lack any soul and they lack any kind of sense of spark. And what's fascinating there is, like, ultimately at the end of the day, it's like if, you know, for a lot of our customers, they're in this app all the time. So the one way that I started thinking about it is it's almost like people can choose to use Flow, and that might mean they're in like a WeWork style office space where everything around them is, you know, beautifully designed and it has a lot of perfect attention to detail. And for a lot of our competitors, it's like you're in the Office Space movie Office Space, where there's like terrible fluorescent lights, you're in cubicles, terrible carpet, terrible chairs. But what's profound there is like thinking of software as a physical space, and that customers at the end of the day will choose and will vote, I think especially the younger customers, for something that resonates with them. And so really latched on to that kind of focus on aesthetic and focus on design. And then that led us, and I'll be quick here and then we can, you know, do a deeper dive if it would be interesting. But just the quick overview is the way I then approached it from that understanding is, okay, I know we need to be a brand that no matter where we show up, we come across as having a very high bar for execution on the design side. And so that was one piece that's somewhat helpful. And then I spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, well, what does that mean if we really want to, I guess, own that idea that ultimately what is lacking in the productivity space? And I'll give you another great quote we heard from one of our customers, but they had tried Asana for a long while. And one of the quotes they gave us that just continued to like ring in my head after after hearing it, was that their team felt like accountants in Asana, because the way Asana treats a lot of their task lists is that for all intents and purposes ends up looking like an Excel spreadsheet. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's fascinating that customers are saying, I don't want to feel like an accountant. Like, yes, I need to do work. It doesn't mean I need to be in like a super bland, boring tool all the time. So, okay, thought a lot about that. What does that mean? How do we have a tool that people want to spend time in, that people love using? And so we started investing in things like multiple themes for a product. So it almost becomes more like colorways, where yes, you can use Flow, but do you want it to be white and bright? Do you want it to be dark? Do you want it to be kind of warm with brownish, greenish tones? And then you can choose accent colors that will stylize the whole app. So if you choose blue, everything that's clickable and interactive and where we want to draw your eye towards is blue, but you can do purple and orange. And so that led us some interesting places. And I think that's what was really fascinating for me, is it was a chance to get to work at the design problem at all layers. And what I mean by that is, ultimately, I think really great brands, especially if you offer a digital product or a product of any sort, you need to have that brand needs to show up in the product itself. That brand needs to show up in the marketing. That brand needs to show up in how you sell to customers and in ads that they see. And then, you know, and for a lot of people, they think of, oh, brand equals logo. Sure, that's perfectly fine. And you know, logo is part of what makes a brand. But again, that's almost like, it's like a diamond ring you throw on after you're done putting on your outfit. You know, it's like one little detail. And so the way that we approached that just at the branding side was, I just assembled a world-class team. And this is something I've always traditionally tried to do, is just say, I think I'm I pride myself on being a really great generalist. I know that I'm strong in a few areas, but I've always aspired to and found a lot of value in what I've referred to as the Hollywood model, where, you know, you go to a movie, you know, you inherently hear it's marketed to you as it's the one director and three actors. And then you get to the end of the movie and there's 1,000 people at the credit list, you know, when you're watching the credits scroll by at the end. And it really is just this notion that in a lot of industries where what you're trying to solve is a complicated problem, you need to have some generalists, but you need to have a lot of specialists. And so I assembled a team that included Jeremy Mickel, that's done some of the logotypes and word marks and typography for Uber and Tillamook Cheese and Fisher Price and all sorts of interesting brands. And then we also worked with a team out of Portland, Oregon called Parakeet that worked with us on a lot of our iconography. And so what we ended up with at the end of the day is, you know, I talked about that toolkit is an immensely rich, amazing toolkit of colors, of custom typography we can use, of really interesting word mark, you know, a great execution of that kind of distilled down to an app icon. I'll stop there. I could go on forever, but it's been a fascinating, fascinating project to work on.
It is. And I think that story really highlights everything behind a solid rebrand. So I think you could follow those questions and be on a successful path for those listening. Daniel, as we start to wrap up, certainly a lot of the aspects of this conversation have made me smile, but it is my turn to ask you for a brand that makes you smile.
I'll give you one that I stumbled across really recently. It's a new brand, but it struck me as executing really well all of the things that I was just talking about, of having a keen understanding of who they are and what they are offering that's very different from their competitors. But I think also just a really great approach to execution, where every touch point I've come across with them looks and feels very different, very intentional. And it's going to be the most boring thing. So all that build up, and then here goes the big letdown. But it's a new probiotic product called Seed. And what's fascinating about it is, like I said, you know, again, I think brand is a tool, regardless of what space you're in, that you can use to separate yourself from the competition. And I think it's a tool that's relevant now more than ever before, because there's more brands in every space. You're competing for everyone's very limited attention. And I think what Seed gets really right is, one, recognizing that, you know, I think probiotics are becoming a bigger thing that everyone's starting to accept as just something we should all probably be taking, some sort of probiotic supplements. And they have a very differentiated approach. You know, they can describe the product and how it's different and how it's actually two capsules in one. But, you know, then just for the kind of design side, the design nerd within me, it's just beautifully executed. You know, the pills come in this like beautiful green glass bottle. They give you this vial you can put pills in to take with you. And then just every touch point's beautiful. The packaging is beautiful. They have a huge emphasis on sustainability, and that shows up in, you know, this kind of pulp paper packaging that you get with it and the glass products. And so I think it's just, so far from interactions with them, I think it's just a masterclass on how do you get that right when you're super, super early on. Like, they literally just shipped their product for the first time, I want to say, in the last month, and they've already got a lot of it down.
Awesome. That is an excellent example and a first-time smile here on the show. Daniel, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, great question. So anyone that's, if you're at all interested in checking out Flow, please come and give us a look. You can find us online at getflow.com. And I'll just throw that out there. If anyone's listening, if anyone's made it this far wants to get in touch or has other questions, feel free to email me at daniel@getflow.com. And then everyone can also find me on my own website at danielscrivener.com. My last name's a little tricky. It's just super harsh in German. So it's Scrivener, S-C-R-I-V-N-E-R. So danielscrivener.com.
Awesome. And we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Daniel, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you so much for having me on. Love the show.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.